Accession number 30134, reel 19.
Okay, so this is Joe Sedfrey and it's reel 19. I was just sort of telling a little story there, Joe, of Bob Atkinson telling us his story of his position astride this lonely place on Virginia, or on the other side of Virginia. And he was saying that he remembers being in this very wet hole, firing a Bren gun for almost the whole of a day, it seemed to him.
Absolutely, well, whenever they appeared, it's a wonder we did not run out of ammunition.
Yeah.
Oh, yes, well, that was it. I mean, that's all we could do. Sit tight. Although Stuart took out one or two patrols, scouring the woods, did some very excellent work. But by and large, what we had to do, what the battalion had to do, was to sit tight and wait until the rest come up. At least we got there. And that was it. And that was it. As I say, an unbroken series of infiltration attacks, particularly between A and C, because that was the dense part. Actually, had we not fired and did all this, they would quite possibly, obviously, would have formed up inside this dense plantation and rushed us. We never gave them a chance, either with our friends or constantly caught, well, as soon as we could get the artillery onto us. And Captain Lester did a wonderful job because he was constantly being shelled. I mean, Germany knew where we were, and we were being shelled too. Constantly being shelled, so and he stuck to that place by dead hoss, by luck he wasn't hit, and his set worked intermittently. Mm. And when we felt things getting too hot, we got the guns and very nearly on top of us, as you'll find in this report, 400 to 500 yards from our forward position.
Yes.
And I felt hot metal whirring over, but still, Germans were in the open. They caught it, and we dug down. So that was the situation, and that was the night of the 11th. A very uncomfortable night. Very uncomfortable. Mind you, this wonderful quartermaster somehow infiltrated through the Germans and got through to us.
I was going to ask you, Joe, about that.
Oh, yes, a hot meal.
How did you manage all the way through
this?
Well,
now this chap, as I said before, he was wonderful. I did it, I don't know. Well, he was an old soldier, too. I mean, he wasn't just a sort of an administrative type, he was a soldier. We were in a very difficult position. I mean, the Germans, as I say, were in rear now. Evacuation of wounded couldn't be carried out for the time being anyhow. It made us comfortable as possible. Original aid posts, communications were cut. Wireless erratic. No new batteries. They were getting low. And there it is. And I mentioned here Lieutenant Stewart's patrols between A and C Company and wrecking fine. It looked as if the enemy, the Germans, were preparing for a strong counterattack, and that, of course, is when 15 Panzer was located by Britain. And that is how the 12th of February opened up. And the pressure increased not only on us, but the other companies too, feeling the pinch. By midday, almost complete failure of wireless communication with brigade, between brigade and battalion, and also very sketchy with the gunners. We still had the tanks. And what happened then, yes, and that is, as I say, I felt we weren't spent anyway, nothing more we could do except shoot it out. At 1400 hours, I note here on the 12th of February, the enemy made a particularly strong infiltration attack between A and C companies, and also pressure on C and D, and all companies were committed. At that stage, Lieutenant K from B Company, which was in reserve, as far as reserve could be, and a troop of tanks strengthened the positions between A and C. And the carrier platoon was placed under command of A Company to strengthen position between A and D. And a short, sharp counterattack second in command with B Company and remnants of C through the wood also helped. But it was a question of back to the war, if you like. And that was about 1400 hours, and things looked a bit black.
But you had the road behind you at this stage, Joe, didn't you? Virginia was behind you.
Yes, the road was behind us. Mm. Yes. Yes, we were, yes, but it's a question of holding on to it and preventing. Yes. Now, as I mentioned here, Corporal Bryan did splendid work. And Stuart. Now, about PM on the 12th, the remaining battalions of 158 came up, and communication with the rear was reopened, and things started looking up. 13th of February, we call this the end of another phase, 71 Brigade, who had done the initial attack west of the Reichswald, came through. And to attack the Germans on the east of the Reichswald. And then the battalion moved down to the southeast tip of the forest, down to Asperden, not Asperberg, in that area, and really did then a subsidiary role, because 51 they were passing that way, and 71 Brigade were passing through us.
Yes, there's, again, looking at the map, Joe, there's this is on the edge of the village, as you say, of Asperden.
That's right.
And there's a river running through the Neers.
The Neers River, yes. And it was on the 13th that we first saw the glimpse of the sky. After 5 days of soggy whatnot.
Was that a fine day, Joe, can you recall, or you saw the sky?
A mixed up day, but still it was dry. Yes, and I think the history says a rather weak sun helped us to dry through.
Nice.
So
for the first time in a number of days,
that's
obviously.
Right. So that then after that, the battalion had moved off to, by the time the battle had gone on, to a place called Howe. Briefly.
Yes, this is just to the northeast of the forest, and it's H-A-U, it's
stopped.
That's
right, well, that was sort of a very poor comment, anyway, whatever, what they call bullets, but I mean, there was a bright certain amount of shelter. Mm. And from there back to Nijmegen. Now, then, at that stage, I was evacuated, because I had an infection of the left leg, which had started actually in the last stages of the Reichswald attack, and I felt some difficulty in moving, which got worse and worse and worse. And my leg then swelled up to elephantine proportions, and I couldn't even walk, I had to be lifted. Mm. Went off to Eindhoven, where there's a military hospital, and spent 3 weeks there on this marvellous new drug called penicillin. And I think I was put on it three times every 24 hours, and eventually rejoined the battalion after they had battled their way to the west bank of the Rhine. But that's another story.
Yes. Yes, what caused the infection on your leg, Joe?
I don't know quite, but I felt it coming on. It might have been even a splinter from a grenade or something, because there was a lot of stuff flying around. Mm. But something which caused an infection, and the infection caused the swelling.
Yes. So you were out of the line,
for
3 weeks, which would have taken you up to early days of March?
Well, it would have taken us, because after that, there was the battles for the West Bank of the Rhine, Wies and Hofburg and so on. Then there was the crossing of the Rhine, which we didn't do, of course, but we went across. And then the fighting on the other side, in the course of which I was wounded.
Yes, but I'm just trying to establish now, just fairly closely as to when you rejoined the battalion.
Well, it would have... just give me that.
The book, yeah.
Yes, I will. Because I shall find that date.
Let's pause this a second.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks, Joe. So we've just established that you rejoined the battalion in Lullingdon after they'd cleared and fought through and cleared the west bank of the Rhine. Just to go back on those days in the Reichswald, Joe, for those days between the 8th of February and I think around 13th. The 15th, 13th,
14th. Oh, yeah, well, 15th. That's 13th when our part was fit, but the 16th was still there.
Just thinking about, I mean, there were very harsh conditions, extremely harsh, terrible conditions, and just wonder now, after all these years, your thoughts on the quality of the men that you were fighting with at that stage.
Well, the quality of the soldiers couldn't be better. They were really the salt of the earth. They were splendid men, right back from the days of Dunkirk, when they were all regular then. But the magnificent stand they made to the last round, the imperturbability, and which they bore all privations and difficulties and hardships in a very desperate situation where, had things gone wrong, they wouldn't have survived or been prisoners of war, because he fought it to the last round. And for people like that, who could march past their commanding officer at a checkpoint into Dunkirk proper, when ordered to do so by their company commander, and as they were, without having fought all that day, with hardly anything, nothing to eat or drink, except the stale water in their water bottles, unshaved, unwashed, stinking, and could still march past with that pride, and also defiant pride, in front of their commanding officer, says much for the morale and spirit of these men. Later on in the fighting, we didn't have the regulars, but the national service people, national servicemen who took their place, had the same qualities. And the endurance, and not only the endurance, but the fighting qualities, in spite of all conditions, they always showed in the conditions from Normandy with its hot sun, never away from the stink, the smell of death, and the sight of death, animal and human, around them in a very compact situation where they were never very far from almost close quarters to the enemy, to the subsequent fighting. Not only through Holland, but in the extreme conditions of the Ardennes, subarctic conditions with frequent blizzards in the worst winter for 40 years, where they endured in just the battle dress they stood up in, 5 days and nights, and got their objective, fighting through the forest, and their final objective, when about two-thirds of each company was their casualties, where the battalion headquarters was knocked out, where the tanks were unable to join us, but still, under those terrible conditions, gained their objective, albeit at heavy casualties. But their spirit was undaunted right to the end. From those conditions of subarctic conditions to the soggy fighting in the Reichswald, in conditions of the thaw, mud, incessant rain, transport bogged down, a lot of the kit and equipment, mortars, ammunition having to be humped manually, with hardly any rest, erratic feeding, soaked to the skin, and still managed to fight doggedly on, and with a final spurt, a commendable spurt, to reach the final objective. After 5 days of continuous fighting, I think that there is no equal amongst any other soldiers in the world in what the British soldier did and can do and the Lancastrian soldier at that.
Thank you very much, Dan. You want to continue this another day now, don't you?
Yes, well, the other day we'll round off with I'd like to get it prepared properly.
Yes, okay. Well, thank you for now, Jan.
That's all right, okay. Well, there we are. That's that.